On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's a minute past the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia, it's election day. Primary election day. No need for a civics lesson here. It's not really an election. It is a nomination process. That's why I don't understand when people say, well, independents should get to vote. Yeah, well, independents do get to vote in our primary now, and for the life of me, I can't figure out why. If you're independent, it means you don't want to be part of a party. Only parties have nominating processes. But what the hell, you know, that's just common sense and logic, and who wants to dirty up their little brain on that? Uh-oh. I promise that's not the bad attitude that will suffuse the rest of the program. No, I went and voted today, and to tell you the just blatantly honest truth, my primary purpose, haha, see, primary, get it? Yeah, Bob made it funny. My primary purpose was to go and vote in the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals election. Because, see, one of our dirty, dirty, dirty Supreme Court judges, a guy named Elliot Spike Maynard, is running for re-election. And to the extent that I had the opportunity to do so, I wanted to make sure I went and voted against that dirty, coal horse son of a bitch. Because he is all of the above. I also cast my ballot for Barack Obama. Because I have in the last few days gotten sick and tired of being told that my beloved state, my West Virginia, is nothing but an agglomeration of ignorant, redneck, racist, bigoted, white people from up some holler somewhere who listen to the theme from Deliverance while they're in their 20, 30, 40-year-old pickup truck a-driving down to cast their vote for Hillary. Because I can't vote for that Obama. I done heard that he is a Muslim. And his mama, or his wife, as the case may be, depending on which ignorant is telling you, is an atheist. I can't vote for no atheist! But I've had that happen. Damn it, I said I wasn't going to do this. I said I wasn't going to do this, and I'm doing it anyway. See how it happens? I've heard this Obama is a Muslim thing a dozen times if I've heard it once. Probably more than a dozen times. Here in my beloved home state. And I should tell you, it's only fair that each time I've heard it, I have asked the person, where did you get that idea? You know what the answer is every time? I heard it in church. Really? No kidding. That's where it comes from. And it is, for those of you who are familiar with it, a blood libel. See, here's how it works. Muslims flew planes into the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. Muslims killed 3,000 Americans. Barack Obama's middle name is Hussein. Therefore, Barack Obama is a Muslim. What's more, he won't wear no flag pin, and he wants to take the oath of office on the Koran. That is a blood libel. That's how they work. They've been promulgated down through the centuries, primarily with Jewish European populations being the bearing the brunt of them. But in light of the fact that after September 11th, 2001, we've had men pulled from taxi cabs and murdered on the spot for wearing a turban, and nine times out of ten they were Sikhs and not Muslims. And now this blood libel against Barack Obama, I had to do what little I could to dispel it. And now I'm informed by email, let me get this right, because it just rolled in before the show. Our buddy David down in South Carolina says, the West Virginia governor was just on the TV warning Obama about ignoring Reagan Democrats. David says, so I guess stupid white folks in West Virginia are just as stupid as stupid white folks in South Carolina, and they will vote for some ignorant bastard who will steal them blind and laugh at them. White people are a strange group indeed. Yes, we are. But that much is not news. See, you got to understand a little bit about the governor of West Virginia. Joe Manchin, he's a coal whore, and he thinks very highly of himself. And what's more, he has never voted for a Democrat in his life who didn't have the name Manchin at the end of it. You get the idea. The Manchin family in 1968 started a group called Democrats for More and helped elect the single most crooked Republican, the single most crooked governor this state's ever had, Arch Moore. In 1996, the Manchin family started a group called Democrats for Underwood and helped elect Cecil Underwood, the single most inept, idiotic, downright dumb governor this state has ever had. In both instances, because Manchin's ran in a Democratic primary and got derailed and didn't win. So then they went and helped the other side get elected, purely out of spite. Wait a minute. That seems... I've heard that idea brooded about... Oh, dear. Yeah, Reagan Democrats. David goes on and says, Reagan Democrats equals Repiglicans. Christian values voters equal white bigoted right-wing Repiglicans. Working class white voters equals Reagan Democrats equals Repiglicans. And it's sad that that is, in fact, an equation. The media say McAints, preachers, and spiritual advisors are not the same issue as Obama's. True, McAint is white and his preachers are white, so that explains that. Series of questions proffered by David, and I think they're good ones. How many wars have our black brothers and sisters started for the United States? Are they responsible for rising gas prices? Did they import the cocaine, heroin, and crack into this country? Are black Americans responsible for high unemployment? Are black Americans responsible for the occupation of Iraq? Did black Americans put Bushco in power? Did they put Reagan in? Are black Americans responsible for all these people without health insurance? Are black Americans responsible for torture in the war on terror? David says, seems obvious to me that white folks are responsible for the situation we're in. Confronted with the facts in that fashion, you kind of got to agree, don't you? Sadly, yes. Yes, indeed. Now, I got to tell you, I got in touch with my inner jerk. Agnes and I both received direct mail solicitations begging from the Hillary campaign begging for money. They came with a prepaid, postage-paid envelope, you know, no postage necessary of mail in the United States, that kind of thing. So I got to figure it costs her a stamp for me to send it back. And since, you know, she didn't ask me my permission to send me a direct mail solicitation, I can at least charge her for the time that it took me to read the stupid begagram. So I went on the internet, and I found me an image from The Wizard of Oz of the sky riding where it says, Surrender Dorothy. I printed it out on a full sheet of paper and wrote, Dear Hillary, Please stop. You're embarrassing yourself. You lost. Get over it. It's time to move on. And I used her 42 or 43 cents or whatever it was to mail it back to her. Like I said, I was getting in touch with my inner jerk, but I'm sick of political ad signs. I'm sick of political flyers. I'm sick of political solicitations in my mail. I am sick, 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 sick of it all. So the least, and you know, Agnes, we just licked her envelope and put it in the mail, too. So I think my time of reading that stupid solicitation was worth 43 cents. I think it was actually worth considerably more than that, but that was all that I could charge her for it. So, yeah, I did do that. And we will wait now for the outcome. And I'm looking here at a Daily Coast diary that our buddy Lilo in the chat room provided to me, trying to analyze, it's titled White Voters, Obama, and Appalachia. And it comes to some interesting conclusions. But I got to tell you, just because I'm cranky, well, I always kind of get a little when somebody outside Appalachia starts trying to tell me what Appalachians are like. And I think that, yeah, I know that applies to the South. The South just loves having Yankees tell them how they ought to be thinking or behaving or believing or knowing. And I imagine it probably goes pretty well in the Northeast as well. And people generally don't like being talked at from the outside. And that's why I acknowledge whenever I'm doing something like that, that I could very well be channeling my inner jerk again. So it's over. We've had our primary. The polls will close in about an hour and 15 minutes. And then the national media will mercifully forget us once again and go away, and we can get back to the business of having our homes, our cultures, our families, and our very ways of life attacked every day, 3 million pounds of high explosives at a time. And NBC won't, well, NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, CNN, Headline News. None of them saw Cayford Mountain. Well, I take that back. I think Anderson Cooper saw Cayford Mountain, or some CNN crew did. Good for him. But, you know, we're just a little teeny tiny pawn in the great game of democratic electoral politics. Now, you may get a kick out of knowing this. Tonight, the state of West Virginia, and more particularly the Repiglican Party of the state of West Virginia, will nominate as its candidate for governor a high school dropout. Really, no joke. By the end of the night, a man from Raleigh County by the name of Russ Weeks, who doesn't have the sense to pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel, he's so damn dumb, will be the Repiglican nominee for governor of this state. Let me repeat that. This is where the Repiglican Party is in West Virginia. By the end of the night, the Repiglican Party of West Virginia will have nominated as its gubernatorial candidate a high school dropout. Not just a high school dropout, but a high school dropout who along the way has done considerable business with Massey Energy, either directly or indirectly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he's a man of faith. He was a man of simple faith. He's Simon Simple and Simon Pure. And he is a jackass. Because he's pro-life. You know, I actually challenged him on the air one time back in the bad old days of terrestrial radio. He called in to take issue with me for saying that he was a political whore just like everybody else. I've never taken a dime! I just said, don't worry, you will. And I said, but I don't disagree, you know, so what? I'm used to that. Political graft, political corruption, it's the oil that lubricates the political machine in this state. But I said, I'm a lot more bothered by your stance on children. What do you mean? I'm pro-life! I said, that's the problem. You're pro-fetus. You believe that every fetus has to be born. Absolutely, abortion is murder! I said, yeah, but what happens to them after they're born, Russ? What happens to them then? You don't care about them after they're born, do you? And he said, and I kid you not, I'm only responsible for them before they're born. Really? This is going to be the Republican nominee for governor of West Virginia. They are sending a sacrificial lamb to the slaughter. Because, see, we're going to get Joe Manchin for another 4 years until Joe Manchin can find a way to replace Robert C. Byrd as senator from the state of West Virginia. Joe Manchin, every chance he gets, he sits down with the pro-lifers, too. He's pro-life, too. He's pro-fetus. He's anti-uterus. He sits down and breaks bread with them at any chance. Takes his cues from the Wheeling diocese. Wants to make sure that he stays pro-life so he can eat the magic cracker every Sunday if he shows up. And at the same time runs a coal business that thrives on the destruction of Appalachia. Woo! Can't beat that. Can't beat that for fun. Mark Levine asked me in a private chat earlier before the show, God, Bob, why do you stay there? And I said, Mark, somebody's got to fight against these bastards. And I'm willing to be one of them. It's in my blood. I'm of Scots origin. We'll fight over a golf ball. We'll fight over a rusty nail. In this case, it's a little more serious, though. In this case, it's a lot more serious. So we got to hunker down for 4 more years. 4 more years of Joe Manchin. And maybe in those 4 years, we in the mountaintop removal opposition will finally figure out that we've got to start fielding our own candidates. Maybe we'll figure out that we can't rely on saviors anymore. That we have to apply that biblical premise that says, physician, heal thyself. To ourselves. I can't wait till the day comes when every single election in every single county and every single state office has a candidate in it who is hotly, decidedly, determinedly opposed to mountaintop removal. Then we'll start making progress. We'll start making political progress. The people that I know, the folks from Coal River Mountain Watch, the bravest people I know, have made tremendous grassroots progress uphill with their feet in a bucket and still have raised awareness of this horrific practice to a level that is almost unimaginable. Lives have been sacrificed. Families have been sacrificed. Health has been sacrificed. All to save our communities from the depredations of mountaintop removal. The next step is to be savvy about the political process and start fielding anti-mountaintop removal candidates and funding them. At least that's where I see it going, and that's just me. But daggum, this was not supposed to be what the show was about tonight. No, not at all. It's about 20 minutes past the hour, and instead of any of that, now that we've gotten it out of the way, I don't care if we talk about it. Well, okay, one last thing. A Financial Times article over at FT.com, West Virginia keeps distance from Obama. Listen to the opening paragraph. Like most people in Mingo County, West Virginia, Leonard Simpson is a lifelong Democrat. But given a choice between Barack Obama and John McCain in November, the 67-year-old retired coal miner would vote Republican. I heard that Obama is a Muslim and his wife's an atheist. What did I tell you? Said Mr. Simpson, drawing on a cigarette outside the fire station in Williamson, a coal mining town of 3,400 people surrounded by lush wooded hillsides. Now, that I heard he's a Muslim paragraph, you have to go 12 paragraphs before the Financial Times points out that, of course, that's a lie. And that is how the blood libel gets spread. See, it's right there in the newspaper. It says it right there in the first couple of paragraphs. It says it's a quote from a feller says he's a Muslim, and they don't say nothing to say he ain't. Of course, you have to go way, 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 way down in the article to find out that, yeah, it's a damn lie. I heard he's a Muslim and his wife's an atheist. But that's not all. The Washington Post had a little article today that was rather interesting. Headline, Racist Incidents Give Some Obama Campaigners Pause. Talks about the bomb threats that went into the Obama campaign offices in Indiana, of which there was very little said. Page three. Karen Seifert, a volunteer from New York, was outside of the largest polling location in Lackawanna County, Pennsylvania, on primary day when she was pressed by a Clinton volunteer to explain her backing of Obama. Seifert replied, "I trust him." According to Seifert, the woman pointed to Obama's face on Seifert's T-shirt and said, "He's a half-breed and he's a Muslim. How can you trust that?" Just saying. A half-breed and a Muslim. At least she didn't work in the atheist part. But that is not what tonight's program is about. Not at all. No, instead I want to focus on something that I think is far more significant. Decades ago, perhaps almost a century ago, Eugene O'Neill penned a play called The Iceman Cometh. It has a dramatically different meaning now. Now, in Bushmerica, in the year 2008, The Iceman Cometh means that your brown butt is headed for a concentration camp pretty damn quick. The Iceman cameth to Postville, Iowa, recently. Not just the Iceman, but the Icemen and oodles of other law enforcement agents. Monday, they issued criminal search warrants for aggravated identity theft and fraudulent social security numbers for workers at a company called AgriProcessors in Postville, Iowa. These were, of course, largely undocumented, supposedly, alien workers. And as the blog over at hotair.com noted, ICE finds 300 people doing jobs Americans won't do in Iowa meatpacking plant. Yep, they just hauled them away. Men, women, hauled them off. Now, there's more to the story than meets the eye. Far more. You have to know a little bit about agriprocessors. agri-processors is a brutal business. That old saying that I mentioned last night, that there are two things in America you don't want to see made, and that's laws and hot dogs, has a lot of truth. Agri-processors is a kill and chop and process meat plant. And it is nasty business. It is low-paying business. It is abusive business. Even the animals are not immune. PETA released a video of agri-processors in 2006 that showed, and I'm no fan of PETA, okay? I'm not. But when you go in there and you see the video, you know, it's, well, you know, you must like PETA. No, I don't like PETA. But you know what? I do tend to believe my lion eyes. Because, you know, PETA doesn't manufacture video cameras. And what you saw from agri-processors was, of course, every bit as disgusting and horrifying as all the other meatpacking abuses and horrors and carnage that they have documented in meat processing plants in Chico, California, and even chicken plants in West Virginia. It's a disgusting place, agri-processors, asking people to do disgusting things. And their workforce has a habit of trying to organize and become members of the United Food and Commercial Workers. This does not sit well with agri-processors. Among other things, workers at agri-processors have walked out over such things as safety conditions and environmental violations. I had a great conversation with a young journalist by the name of Jason Mortvet, who's the assignment manager and special projects reporter at KWWL in Waterloo, Iowa, this afternoon, and he provided me some background information on agri-processors. That information says the following. We took a tour of the plant last year when it was rumored that employees walked out over working conditions. Since 2001, the company has had at least 17 serious OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, violations. It was also fined by the Environmental Protection Association in 2006 under a consent decree, which is like a guilty plea, sorta, for corporations. It was fined $600,000 for dumping untreated sewage and wastewater into the Postville, Iowa City water system. It has also been sued by the National Labor Relations Board by virtue of its bad faith refusal to bargain with its workers' union. In the court case, agri-processors, remember, this is the boss. These are the people who hire and pay the workers. You know, the illegal aliens, the illegal brown people, the illegal human beings. They have responded to an attempt to organize by running social security numbers and using the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the ICEmen, as federally subsidized, you know, that means paid for by you and me, the taxpayers, union busters. Yeah, really. They've run the social security numbers of the employees in the union and discovered, they say, that most of the numbers either didn't exist or belonged to other people, like agri-processors didn't know that when they hired them. Because, you see, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of workers were hauled out of agri-processors yesterday. arrested, treated like common criminals, treated like trash, taken away to detention facilities where they have no access whatsoever to, come on, say it with me, habeas corpus. All of that. And, of course, we only discovered after we hired them. We would never have hired them if we'd known they were illegals. No one is giving much comment except for the strictly institutional garbage that Agriprocessors is putting out. Last year, KWWL interviewed the ownership of Agriprocessors, and they said it's company policy to take a hard stand against illegal immigrants. Now, to be fair, the stand gets harder when the illegal immigrants start wanting to be treated like human beings. You know, have a union, collective bargaining, health care, pensions, a meaningful future, a right not to be treated like animals. Who is Agriprocessors? Agriprocessors of Postville, Iowa is the single largest meatpacking house for kosher meats in the United States. When I read that, I wanted to scream. Because, and Mark Levine, if you're around, you can straighten me out on this. There are very, very strict rules about humanely killing animals and things like that that go with the koshering or kosher butchery, that kind of stuff. But the human animals who do the work for them. The human animals who do the work for them, well, they're not treated like human beings, because when they stand on their own hind legs and demand union representation, they get the Iceman called on them. Because, you see, Mr. Rubashkin, Shalom Rubashkin, knows that by virtue of having this crop of so-called illegal human beings hauled away, that the next crop of illegals that sign up to work for him will be much less likely to stand on their own hind legs and demand that they be treated like human beings. Because they're not treated like human beings. They are treated like what they are. American helots. H-E-L-O-T-S. Read up on helots. Google it. You'll find it pretty quick. It's a pretty sad and sorry life. I want to share with you anti-labor politics makes for strange bedfellows. Shalom Rubashkin runs this kill plant in Iowa. And I gotta say, and this is without regard to religion, this is how I feel about people who treat other human beings like garbage. I would not pee on Shalom Rubashkin if his guts were on fire. I really wouldn't. Because anybody who wants to profit magnificently from the labor of the most desperate among us has something profoundly wrong with him. And so it's very interesting. This is a letter from Shalom Rubashkin from Agriprocessors' own website. It's dated November 14th, 2007. It is directed to the customers of Agriprocessors Incorporated. He says, I am writing to you to dispel certain misconceptions that may have arisen as a result of inaccurate information of which you may have become aware concerning Agriprocessors, Inc. Agriprocessors, Inc. is a viable company that is committed to maintaining the quality of its product both in full compliance with existing rules and regulations of the USDA and in full compliance with the rules of Kashrut. Never mind that little bit about pouring animal waste into the city water supply. We'll just pretend that didn't happen. Over the past couple of years, the employees of Agriprocessors, Inc. in Iowa have resisted attempts. That's right, it was a resistance. It was a resistance. Just brave, bold resistance of attempts by the United Food and Commercial Workers to become their collective bargaining agent. Notice the use of language. To become their collective bargaining agent. No. What they're saying, and what the, let's translate that out of corporate union busting speak into English. Over the last few years, we have been successful in threatening illegal aliens with their very lives in order to keep them from joining the United Food and Commercial Workers. Back up. The workers have resisted attempts by the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. Actually, it's the United Food and Commercial Workers. The United makes union a little bit redundant, but I'm sure Shalom Rubashkin couldn't be bothered with the niceties of language. He is, after all, a ball-busting union breaker. To become their collective bargaining agent, Agriprocessors, Inc., in the past has and will continue in the future to maintain a commitment to its employees to create a safe, enjoyable, and mutually beneficial atmosphere in the workplace while they slit the throats of cattle, lambs, veal, ducks, geese, but not pigs! The UFCW, as it has in the past, we believe. See, there's that hateful word, believe. He can't say he knows because he would be lying then. The UFCW, as it has in the past, we believe, is engaging in a course of conduct which has been referred to as, quote, waging economic war on an unorganized company, unquote, the present target of which is Agriprocessors, Inc. As part and parcel of this campaign, the UFCW has disseminated inaccurate and false information which is designed to destroy Agriprocessors, Inc.'s image and inflict economic damage. The UFCW has also inappropriately attempted to contact existing business relationships in order to interfere with the lawful business of Agriprocessors, Inc. Now, you have to have a little bit of a schooling in the history of the labor struggle to understand what that statement means. You can go all the way back to Olde England to a case. Oh, come on, Bob, come on. Damn, it's not there. It's a case that in which a company charged tortious interference with business relations against a labor organizer who wanted to organize the workers of a circus. The labor organizer, a man by the name of Jack Lugg, I believe, found out that the girls who worked in the chorus of the circus were forced to engage in prostitution in order to enhance their pathetically meager salaries that they earned working for the What Tut Tut Review. The case went up to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and the Chancellor ruled in favor of Jack Lugg and his union and threw out the claim of tortious interference with business relations. It took a few more years for the same notion to catch on in the United States because, after all, as Calvin Coolidge noted, that filthy repiglican, the business of America is business. So as a consequence, American businesses continued to use the claim of tortious interference with business relations whenever unions tried to use economic action to compel the right of employees to freely assemble that is guaranteed them in the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. That's why you get lines like, as part and parcel of this campaign, the UFCW has disseminated inaccurate and false information which is designed to destroy Agriprocessors, Inc.'s image and inflict economic damage. The UFCW has also inappropriately attempted to contact existing business relationships in order to interfere with the lawful business of Agriprocessors, Inc. Moreover, we believe that the union has been instrumental in orchestrating, and he put this in italics, frivolous investigations of our company by governmental authorities. So frivolous, in fact, that Agriprocessors, Inc. entered into a consent decree with the United States government by which they admitted to having dumped untreated animal wastewater from a butchering operation into the public water supply of Postville, Iowa. By the way, if you buy kosher products, and you know I do, anytime that I go out for buy hot dogs, you know, I pick up the Oscar Mayer and the Cons and the Son, and they all say, water, beef, pork, chicken lips, donkey gizzards, cereals, grains, yada, yada, BHA, BHT, nitrous ammonia, oh, yeah, yada, 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 yada. And I just put them down because that just don't sound tasty to me. I pick up Hebrew National and it says, beef, water, done. Spices. Beef, water, spices. Done. So, you know, I am a consumer of kosher meats. I love Hebrew National hot dogs. Hebrew National salami. Huh! Whoa. Oh, with scrambled eggs and onions on a Sunday morning? Yeah, baby! And their knockwurst is pretty damn good, too. With a little Thousand Island on a roll? So be aware, the stuff that comes out of this filthy plant in Iowa is marketed under the name Aaron's Best and Rubashkin's. Also, about a third, maybe two-thirds, is also marketed as Iowa's Best Beef, and it is not marked kosher. So, Iowa's Best, Rubashkin's, Aaron's Best. I wouldn't eat it if I was starving. Now, what Mr. Shalom Rubashkin is all pissed off about is the fact that he has been repeatedly investigated and busted for running a filthy operation. Now, bear in mind, the rabbis have never walked out, but I guess it's a different set of standards. But he says, to date, all such efforts have been to no avail, talking about the governmental investigations. Remember, this is November 2007, and by then he had already been charged and paid a $600,000 fine for dumping untreated wastewater into the city drinking water supply of Postville, Iowa. To date, all such efforts have been to no avail. And the purpose of this letter is to assure our customers of AgriProcessors, Inc.'s commitment to produce quality products at fair prices while maintaining the integrity of its workplace. Integrity of its workplace means while keeping brown people in slave labor conditions and threatening them with immigration if they walk out again or say a damn word about the filthy little abattoir that we're running in Postville, Iowa. That's what that means. Here's the interesting part, however. This is where anti-labor activities make for strange bedfellows. As an illustration of the UFCW's prior activities against other companies, I'm enclosing a copy of a 94-page complaint filed in the United... Okay, please, a moment, sorry. It's a complaint. It's not a judgment. Please understand the distinction between those. A complaint... You know what? If you've got a typewriter and probably $100, or a printer and a computer and $100, you can go down... And you can file a complaint in the federal court alleging that, I don't know, that Dick Cheney surreptitiously sodomizes your kitty cat every night. You can do that. You really can. It'll be dismissed, but you can. You can anybody with a printer and a filing fee can put just about anything they want to into a federal complaint, or you can file it in your county if you want to, or in your state. You can. It doesn't, because a complaint does not mean that the facts contained, or that the, back up, Bob, a complaint does not mean that the allegations contained in it are true. That's why every complaint comes with the opportunity for the other side to tender what is called an answer, in which they get to say, you lying sacks of dung, you got a bunch of nerve putting that kind of crap into a complaint. So I'm enclosing a 94-page complaint. In other words, no veracity, no proof, just a bunch of allegations. Filed in the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia, Richmond Division, entitled Smithfield Foods, Inc. et anno, the United Foods and Commercial Workers International Union et al. Smithfield Foods is one of the largest American producers of, here's the strange bedfellows part, pork products, and has withstood a similar campaign lodged against it by the UFCW. Now, if you've listened to Mark Levine's program, or this program, you have heard about the working conditions at Tar Heel, North Carolina, and the shameless, un-American, vile, filthy, dirty practices of Smithfield Meats in... I hate to use a sort of freighted word like this, but what else is there in oppressing their workers? The workers at Smithfield Meats Tar Heel, North Carolina plant are, many of them, women. Many of them, Hispanics. Many of them, African Americans. They work on an assembly line where 16,000 hogs are slaughtered every 8 hours. They stand up to their kneecaps in gore and feces and other filth, and wield razor-sharp knives on hog carcasses flying by at breakneck speed. People lose limbs, people lose digits, people lose, most of all, working for Smithfield Meats in Tar Heel, North Carolina, people lose their essential human dignity. But Shalom Rubashkin claims that Smithfield has withstood the UFCW's efforts to organize. That's not at all clear. Smithfield has been beaten time and again in court by the UFCW for its bad faith practices in regard to bargaining with the UFCW. The complaint sets forth at length the allegations against the union having unsuccessfully attempted to organize Smithfield's workers. The union engaged in a course of conduct which was intended to impose economic harm against the company. The motivation, of course, was to bolster the union's membership. You dirty, filthy, rotten, soulless liar. The purpose was to organize the workers and give them back the human dignity that Smithfield Meats had taken away. Additionally, I'm enclosing for review an article entitled Predatory Unionism, authored by Thomas J. DiLorenzo, a professor of economics at Loyola College in Maryland. Wow, now you've got the pork producers and the Jesuits in on the dodge. This just gets weirder and weirder. The article is very informative and quotes Joe Crump, a former official of UFCW, in which he sets forth the nefarious programs employed by the union to exert undue pressure on an unorganized company to bring them to their financial knees, not necessarily for the benefit of the union members, but for the monetary gain of the union itself. Remember, this letter is authored in November 2007. It is now May 2008. And in those 6 months, Shalom Rubashkin has helped to orchestrate a raid in which people guilty of no crime were hauled out in chains and have been secreted away in concentration camps run by the Icemen, where they have no recourse to anything resembling American justice. Welcome to Bushmerica, where you taxpayers subsidize union busting. Aren't you proud? Doesn't it just sort of make you want to stand up and sing? This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife, I thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American. The men who died, who gave that life to me, and I gladly stand up next to you, and it may hurt still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A., where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say,
Jaime, you lay it down cold on my skin. When I was lame, just so you could make me tell you, yes, you take away my mind, you take away the top of the tina. Let me be free of it, babe. I don't want it no more. I'd like to be free of it now. I don't want it no more.
Your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Y'all hate that song. Not the Cool Dire Straits song, but the one before it. I hate it, too. But you know what? I kind of have a reason when I do that stuff. I want to somehow work to the point where the right wing is even ashamed to play that. In my own little tiny infinitesimal way, trying to take that sickening piece of wreck out of our musical lexicon. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, my apologies. I know. Please take your antiemetics so you can stop the retching. And we'll go straight to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Bob. It's your blast of something else from the middle of Tennessee.
All righty.
And as far as Lee Greenwood and that horrifically ugly, bad, nightmarish song, yes, it should be played. It should be the collective burr and under our saddle and all the rest of it, because it is. It's really disgusting. And thankfully, just like those little slivers of that wonderful pickled garlic, you cleanse the palate with Dire Straits. What a great band that was. You know what? Martin Offler's done something that Mick Jagger never did. Do you know what that is?
What's that?
Solo career.
Oh, well, true. Mick tried.
Mick fell straight on his face. Mr. Knopfler sells out soccer stadiums on three different continents, not North America, but he does otherwise. Thank you for such a revealing and neatly tied together, terrific reminder of why we should hate Ayn Rand type business people, Republican Party, bastards that do what they do to simply enrich themselves, speaking of agriprocessors, there's not a, I'm sorry, it's, you know, we all thought that crap was over when John Hershey wrote The Jungle, but au contraire.
Yeah, well, but it was over. That started putting paid to it because that gave us the rise of the USDA and inspections, and we had to wait a couple of generations to think that we were safe so that these benighted bastards could come in and do it to us all over again. It was stopped. It's been rejuvenated.
Republicans could bring it around again, and Sean Hannity could start, you know, speaking to people with a completely straight face. I don't know how he does it, but how Herbert Hoover's misunderstood. But that's not the big reason I called. You remember Monty Python.
Oh, very well.
You remember, is this a cheese shop? Well, there was no cheese. And you also remember, going in to buy an argument. I've called up tonight to start an argument.
No, you haven't.
Just wait a second. I got a feeling, you know, until I say why, and let me have a second on this one.
Okay.
The chat room may go ballistic. I want all of the civilized world to stop right now trying to force feed Burma. Never mind. And I especially want the United States of America to let it go the way it's going to go. Fine. You don't want Frisbees and wheat checks. You don't want power bars. Horrible, ugly military rulers. Fine. Hey, America, wake up. We do not need to take on another lost cause to deplete our resources. It's like someone, you know, just stumbling faster to avoid hitting the floor. We've got Afghanistan. We've got Iraq. We've got people ready to bomb Iran. And suddenly there are well-meaning, well-educated, probably beyond their ability to understand the education, saying we need to, by force, take food into Burma. Get off it, America. Let it happen. Creatively turn your back and take care of what's going on right here. We've got one as big as Burma in Mississippi and Louisiana that goes untended. Damn it, let's get back to the old news that's never been cared for. So, how's the chat room doing? Did I just become, you know, a lower form of life? I'm guessing I did.
Not yet. Of course, there's a little bit of a delay involved, so all of that hasn't gotten there yet.
But I'm serious. Could we begin to look at what's going on at home? Could we just stop looking beyond our own problems? I mean, could we...
Yeah, because that concert for Bangladesh worked out real well, didn't it? Boy, how's that for going back into the vault?
You've done it.
Because that was the same situation. A horrifying cyclone strikes Bangladesh. I get it. I'm not hard-hearted. I'm not one of these, you know, let them starve people. But I understand where you're coming from. You're not either.
Neither am I hard-hearted. I've had rain down the back of my shirt for somebody that didn't know how to change a flap on a busy interstate. I've done that. I've stood up for some guy that, you know, was a little dodgy, but I didn't like the idea that, you know, majority race people were giving another guy hell just because he was a little dark. You know, I'm not uninvolved, but right now it just pains me that our news and some caring individuals are so caught up in Burma. Unless and until we're supposed to invade Burma to take them energy bars? I'm sorry, would they even eat granola? I don't know. What troops? Where are we going to get the troops? All the rest of it. In the middle of the messes we've made around the world.
Well, no. Wait, David. It's just like Iran. We can do it with a bombing campaign.
We could stop a lot of hunger with a bunch of bombs. Yeah, we could, because they don't want to, you know, once they're dead, they eat very little.
That's true. And, you know, we could do, I mean, we've proven it. Look what we did in Afghanistan. We dropped bombs and food packets that looked the same. So you sort of play the lady, if you're a starving Afghan, you play the lady or the tiger, and you pick up the little yellow thing, and it either blows up and takes your head off, or you get some peanut butter and crackers. That's not a joke. We really did that.
No, I know. You have recalled something I hadn't thought about in a while, and the two items look so much alike to someone that never saw our language, never saw packaging. They were so close and looked so much alike. And I'm sorry, you know, it's like deer in the springtime that come out to eat the grass next to the highway and get knocked off by the 18-wheeler.
But if I get you correctly, David, you're suggesting that we deal with our own sucking chest wound?
Thank you.
And I
put that moat in my neighbor's, you know, some kind of log in my neighbor's eye.
Something about not plucking out the moat in our neighbor's eye before we address the beam that is in our own.
Yeah, I've got a wonderful friend, and he's a musician, and he's intensely talented, and he's never solved a single one of his problems. Every time I check in with him, he's got every answer to everything that's bothering me, and he gets angry because I don't follow his advice. And he's had two houses foreclosed out from underneath it. And, you know, I have a tough time not saying, gosh, I love the flowers you bring to the table, but, you know, would you quit crapping on the couch in the meantime? It's just driving me nuts. Let's just stay home and solve some of our own.
I understand it, because, you know, there's actually, beyond the part that everybody remembers about the beam and the moat, there's a reason behind the proverb or the parable or whatever the hell it is. There's a reason behind it. If you have a beam in your own eye, when you go to pluck the moat out of your neighbor's, because your own vision is impaired, you're as like as not to blind him as to heal him.
I had never even thought of that. I was only at the first level. My thing I need to do for myself should take precedence over me explaining how you should handle yours, let alone the fact that in an incapacitation like that, suddenly I'm going to make a bigger mess out of yours.
Isn't that what we're talking about? Making a bigger mess?
Yes, we are. That's exactly right.
The United States is going to go fix Burma? You know, pardon me, time out, but you know, by virtue of being familiar with the network and everything, you know what my guilty pleasure of 1 hour of television a week is.
Monsignor Bourdain.
Correct. And last night, because Peter Godbold was a rerun, I went in, and, you know, Tony Bourdain's in reruns, too. But it was...
I heard your little hands clapping 450 miles away. Oh, goody, oh, goody, oh, goody. Leave me alone for now.
And so, what... Well, sometimes Agnes comes in when Peter's live, and, you know, she runs it and lets me go have my guilty pleasure. But it was an episode I hadn't seen, David.
Oh, a bonus.
It was one I'd really, really been wanting to see. It was the New Orleans episode.
Oh, baby.
And Tony Bourdain had better be careful, or else he's going to, what he refers to as this amazingly well-paid, crappy little job is going to turn him into a journalist. Because the season before, he was nominated for an Emmy for his Beirut episode. I don't see why he shouldn't be nominated for one for this one, too.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, he's been a journalist, you know, with a white starched apron. You know, it's just confused the guys that do the journalism thing. He writes well enough. He creates, he puts words together well enough. All right, and... You very much enjoyed New Orleans.
I didn't enjoy it. I was on the verge of weeping through most of it.
Uh-oh. He had contrasts, I suspect.
he did things that, you know, Anderson Cooper and Katie Couric and Brian Williams haven't done. He actually went and talked to people. There were no blue gelled Klieg lights lighting up the Cathedral of St. Louis at Jackson Square. It was a gritty trip. He went into the lower Ninth Ward, and I saw stuff that there was everything but tumbleweeds, just vast expanses of grass. He interviewed one of the writers for one of the columnists for the New Orleans Times Picayune, and I thought I was just going to bawl. And they explained the code that goes on the houses.
The spray paint
code and what it means.
The various processes.
And I just sat there kind of gripping my abdomen and wondering if the ache in my gut was coming from that stuff they pumped into my gallbladder yesterday, or whether it was coming from the very visceral response I was having to seeing a manifest failure of the American people, David. And I'm not yelling at you. You know that.
Oh, no, no.
But this country that can't get New Orleans up and running... Antoine's, David, Antoine's, the oldest continuously serving restaurant in the United States, opened since 1840, that Antoine's. The Antoine's that Bugs Bunny made such delightful fun with in one of the episodes where he was captured by the two French chefs. And he told him, you know, if you'll let me out of the pot, I'll teach you how to make Bayou Bunny Back Bay Bordelaise a la Antoine's. And they said, what? The Antoine's of New Orleans? And he said, I ain't talking about the Antoine's of Flatbush. That Antoine's. The people who invented Oysters Rockefeller. Antoine's is operating at 40% and may not make it. Because all of the restaurant industry workers are scattered hither, thither, and yon. There are seasoned line cooks from Antoine's who were relocated to Utah.
Oh, now that's criminal. Now you've done it. You're over the line now. Oh, brother. Oh.
And this is the crowd that's going to fix Burma?
Exactly. Thank you. The fact that you're willing to buttress my harebrained pick a fight routine just thrills me no end, because that's exactly...
I don't trust this inept, screwed-up crowd to fix a flippin' hangnail.
They've already screwed up the repair of the levees. It's not... You know, they're not even up to level 3 hurricane standards now. They're less than that because some Bush subcontractor screwed up the repair. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yeah,
These guys are suddenly going to go to Burma with an army that, and I say this reverentially, our army's crazy right now. Our army is not much different than Captain Bat Guano. Our army's not, our service people are strained to the breaking point. Think Cave. Think Brando. Think water in a coconut shell. These people have been abused like no army in modern times. And there are educated, authoritative people saying we need to use our military to force feed Burma. Get off it, guys.
Tell you, you know,
another place.
I'm sorry, and the world needs us, and we give out a lot of food aid. But I've gotten really persnickety, I guess. We don't fix anything else on the planet till we fix the Gulf Coast and fixed the lower Ninth Ward. And by fixing, I don't mean building up the levees so that they'll protect Tony condo communities for pasty-faced, doughy white people.
Nor do you and I mean a bunch of, and I almost said the S word, followed by a load. Nor do you and I mean a whole bunch of new casinos or expanded ports so more stuff can come in from China to ruin our economy. No, let's restore some of the things that were there before. A mixed culture, brown, black, white, yellow folks earning a reasonable living and living in the area. The concept that all of those Antoine's people, the simplest thing you can do in the the restaurant business is find an investor. Boom. Go get a, you know, go get the chiropractor in Denver, or go get that orthodontist in Kansas City. He got $3 million he doesn't know what to do with. Fine. You find him, you hire some great-looking front-end staff, and then the real work begins. The guys that can chop, the guys that can stand over a grill for 8 hours, then the tough part goes. Then the tough part begins. You've watched Bourdain, you know.
Oh, you know, one of the reasons I respect him is he had the nerve. I mean, how could you not? He goes down to New Orleans, and he actually sits down and has a meal with Emeril Lagasse. And he says, at the outset of the interview, he says, you know, I started my career making a fortune by busting your balls and talking shit on you. And but you know what? Emeril was graceful.
Well, then I think a little bit better of it.
And he talked about what they did after Katrina, that as soon as they were able to, they put out a call to people like Bourdain and Mario Batali and the restaurant industry all over the country, and they started asking, listen, do you have anywhere you can put one New Orleans food worker? And that they helped them survive till they could get back home that way.
That's brilliant.
And I watched that, and you know, I've only been to New Orleans a couple of times, but you can't go there and not fall in love. The mad cacophony of the music, the seediness of the tourist culture, even. And then you go a couple of blocks off of the main dragon of Urquhart, and you're into some serious stuff. You're into food that you never imagined existed. You're into music played in keys that most people won't even consider. You're into rhythms that don't happen anywhere but there. And if you're a 24-year-old white kid wandering the streets with a serious face on, you are absolutely blown away by it, and it lives forever in your sort of cultural zeitgeist. And you understand why Faulkner and Hemingway and Twain and all of those people wind up there, because Truman Capote, because you can't not.
It is that city that, among two or three other places in the world, there is an interaction amongst divergent cultures that creates things that just don't happen other places. New Orleans, Istanbul, you've got these incredibly different cultures coming together, and in a rare, very rare occurrence, for the most part, they welcomed each other as opposed to fighting each other. Congo Square, you and I just need to say those two words and then leave it alone, because that is so important to music all around the world. Had African descendants here in the worst way not been allowed drums in that one spot, so much of what we think about, you know, as old guys, like I am, 64, so much of the music I care about, no Congo Square, you know, I'm stuck with Stan Kenton, for God's sake. That's not a pill I'll swallow easily.
Oh, I know, and everything that attaches to it, you, because it's true, once you've been there, you never leave. You know, you can go and live wherever you are, but some little seed of it has grown in your soul, and if it hasn't, you don't have one for it to grow in.
Part of the reason I've never been there, I've always thought if I was ever there, especially based on the stories my father used to tell, you know, I might suddenly have a new quest in my life that would quote ruin me.
Yeah, be unhealthy. Yes. Unhealthy, that's it. And you know, its own history. The first thing, this is lovely, the first thing that the very young United States did after Jefferson purchased Louisiana, including New Orleans, the first thing they figured out right away, and this is part of the history of Thomas Jefferson that no one wants to acknowledge, the first thing that one of the first decisions made, David, was, well, we might have just made them part of the United States, but they ain't voting.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No, wait a second. They're not quite like us. Hold it. Wait a minute. Mulligan.
And I can't help but think about a place like New Orleans when I see headlines on or subject lines on emails from right-wing outfits like, and thugs like Paul Weyrich. Subject line, immigrants must assimilate. What is he, the damn Borg now?
Oh, get off it. Just get off it.
I'm sure they'd love to assimilate if they could be... wait a minute, Mr. Weyrich. You mean assimilate like being able to join a union like an American? Oh, wait. Americans don't have much luck joining unions these days because they have to they have to fight uphill with their feet in a bucket to get the company to recognize the union. Oh, never mind. Yeah, our pal Poppy in the chat room says, no Congo Square, no big spider back, David.
He's absolutely correct. No Sidney Bechet, no Fats Domino. No Henry,
how about Chapatoulas Street, David?
Well, how about Henry Roland Byrd, otherwise known as Professor Longhair? Oh, the wild Chapatoulas. Oh, yeah, buddy. All right, now, you and I are in danger of ruining your show by throwing out so much inside musical baseball.
That's okay. I got some Professor Longhair right here. Let me just reel off a few. You pick, okay? I very seldom let anybody pick the music, but you I trust.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll give you the call. Hey, now, baby.
I'm sorry?
Hey, now, baby. Junko Partner. You know the album. I know you know the album.
It, possibly it could have come to you from someone you know.
How about, since given the topic, how about Mean Old World?
That one's a little ragged. Either one of the first two that you mentioned, because the man, for those that have ever approached the piano, and there's the left hand and there's the right hand, and there's the idea that the left can do things while the right hand does something else, there was an absolute brick wall between the left and the right half of Henry Roland Byrd's brain. He could be doing things on one hand that were so intensely complicated and interesting and polyrhythmic, and the right hand was going nuts. People have just, I've known so many keyboard players that, no, I'm leaving that alone. I'm not up to it. And these are qualified professionals. Nope, I'm not, oh no, I'm not trying that at home or in public. Hey. Whatever you play by fast, it's all right by me. And then there's that first family of New Orleans music, those Nevilles.
Yes, indeedy.
And Dave Bartholomew. And Ernie K. Doe. All right, I told you, it would get a little inside.
Yeah, I know. And look, you thought you were going to be cranky and create a fuss. But the fact of the matter is, if for no other reason than out of compassion for the people of Burma, I would suggest that the United States stay the hell out of it. Let the French try. Let the English try. Let the UK try. Let the Germans try. The Italians. Let the Japanese try. Let the Australians. But for God's sakes, until George Bush is gone from the White House, please. You know, I've got, whenever I'm feeling playful on this program, David, and somebody's being cranky, I'll say, and I've said it to you, you're not helping.
Well, let McCain on his own try. I mean, he almost... You know, he's got another lobbyist on his staff that was one of their biggest cheerleaders to the U.S. Congress. Fine, let those guys do it. Or how about this? Let China, because they have such a great relationship, let China go there and spend some of their resources. Gee willikers.
Of course, they're a little otherwise occupied right now.
Oh.
China.
Yeah, trying to work with their own earthquake, and also put a great face on the fact that they couldn't clear the snow away 5 months ago. Oops. And the whole world's watching how they're going to get ready for the Olympics, where...
You know, it occurs to me, David, that Taoism was born in China. And Taoism is simple and yet complex at the same time. One wonders if anybody in the halls of power in Beijing there, a few rooms off of Tiananmen Square, has bothered to note the fact that the earthquake that struck was centered on the was originated on the Tibetan Plateau.
Well, they care where they put furniture in a room. I'm guessing they probably noticed it too. They may not talk a lot about it.
You know, this is it's sort of a message from the Tao. Free the Tibetan people.
Once again, a classical education offers great factoids for an even better show. Bottom of the hour.
That makes me feel like I'm showing off now. I'm going to stop.
No, you're not. Because at least, you know, who was it? Was it you or was it somebody else that said something about, oh, intellectuals, those are the guys that are educated beyond their ability to use it. Yours is always useful. You know, yours has sprockets and gears. It's not like things on a, it's not like foolish vases on a mantle that don't have any usefulness to them. You have utilitarian application to your thoughts.
Why do you think we invented this radio network, David? I had to have somewhere to be useful. Because this isn't, I got to tell you, this is not very, wondering if there is a sort of Taoist message in an earthquake in China isn't very useful in plowing one's garden.
No,
but you know what? It sure makes the time pass behind the tiller.
Yeah, if you could ever get the rain to stop.
Don't rub it in.
Sorry, boss.
All right.
Say goodnight now, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie.
See ya.
Bye. No, I get what David's saying. I really, really do get what... And as crazy as it may seem, it is out of a profound sense of compassion for the Burmese people that I hope the Bush administration, wish the Bush administration... I mean, you know, you want to help? Write the check. Okay, just write the check and step away. It's kind of like what we ought to be doing with Iraq. Go to the United Nations, say, you know, have one of those 12-step moments where you're at step one and say, we have screwed this up beyond all comprehension. You guys take it. We'll keep writing the check. Because, you know, we're on the hook for the check. No more Halliburton. No more KBR. No more CACI. No more Blackwater. Disarm the little bastards before they come home. And I mean Blackwater. All of that. But, yeah, just as a little... interlude before we move on. Let's do this. Just because it's so upbeat and it's so fun. A little bit of Professor Longhair with Thoughts for New Orleans. Baby, that I was your man.
Houston last night. Tell me, pretty baby, where did you stay last night? When you got home this morning, honey, your clothes didn't fit you right. Did they, gay? Custard out there. Uh-huh, John. Hey, now, baby. Hey, now, honey, child. Hey, now, baby. Hey, now, honey, child. Ooh-wee, darling. Show the way that you were. But I ain't got time. I got to go.
You cannot be, well, if you're in a funk and you put on something like Henry Rollin' Byrd, otherwise known as Professor Longhair, you will come out of that funk. If you're happy and you put it on, you'll be happier when it's done. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'll just run some Professor Longhair this evening, just to, I don't know, just to pick things up a little bit. But that's okay, because you're not going to be happy in a minute or two. Our chat room extraordinaire, ELO, has provided me with a link to an article from the for-profit media in the form of the Politico, who apparently sat down with George W. Bush for reasons as yet unknown, for a little conversation. It was, in fact, George Bush's first online audience. Really? We've been playing little clips of George Bush destroying the language for years. Guess what? You don't qualify as an online audience. Four paragraphs in, George explains what he has done. And I urge you, just as ELO did me, I urge you to sit down for this if you aren't already. Because otherwise, you're just going to start tearing at your clothing and ripping at your hair and running around in circles wherever you are, kitchen, living room, wherever you keep the computer, next to the speakers, whatever, and howling like a crazy person. Somebody's liable to come and take you away if you don't. Because George explains how he manifests the grief process for the soldiers that he's had killed in Iraq. This is that.
Been golfing in recent years. Is that related to Iraq?
Yeah, it really is. I don't want some mom whose son may have recently died to see the commander-in-chief playing golf. I feel I owe it to the families to be as, you know, to be in solidarity as best as I can with them. And I think, you know, playing golf during a war, it just sends the wrong signal.
Mr. President, was there a particular moment or incident that brought you to that decision, or how did you come to that?
No, you know, I remember when DeMello, who was of the UN, got killed in Baghdad as a result of these murderers taking this good man's life. And
stop. The Professor Longhair Happy didn't last very long, did it? He stopped playing golf because of A man who died in the green zone. Oh, really?
I was playing golf. I think it was in Central Texas, and they pulled me off the golf course, and I said, it's just not worth it anymore to do that.
It's just not worth it anymore to do that. He'd been doing it up until he heard about this death, the death of this one individual, which I don't know where it falls on the continuum of 4,076 dead in Iraq alone, not to mention Afghanistan. But, you know, getting American soldiers slaughtered and destroying the American military with a war of his choosing in Iraq and Afghanistan, the way that he deals with it personally is to treat it like something that you sort of give up for Lent. Well, it's Lent. I'm giving up chocolate. Well, it's the Iraqupation. I'm giving up golf. Damn, he is a compassionate conservative, isn't he? It was... okay. He said he made the decision after the August 2003 bombing of the United Nations headquarters in Baghdad that killed Sergio Vieira de Mello, the top UN official in Iraq. And he said it's just not worth it anymore to do. Of course, that was, let's see, June, July. That's about 3 months after mission accomplished. In other words, he was still golfing while American soldiers were dying, and then it dawned on him that it might be bad PR. You know where that came from? That is a direct and proximate result of the work of Michael Moore, who in Fahrenheit 9-1-1 showed him saying, "Yeah, now watch this shot." Skyrocketing gas prices. We will have $4 plus gallon of gas before the week is out here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia. It's $3.96. That 9/10 of a penny just drives me nuts. People go, $3.95 a gallon gas. No, it's $3.95.9, which, you know, round up, $3.96. But in order to bolster John McCain, dear leader says that he'd give some thoughts to the idea of a gas tax holiday. That's what it is. It's a holiday. Sure, you bet. Beautiful, huh?
Mr. President, thank you very much for having us into the Roosevelt Room for the first online interview. In the spirit of the Internet, I wonder if we could ask a question from one of our users, Stephen Bailey of New York, who says, with oil at $126 a barrel, pushing up the price of everything, even food, what can your administration do to help people right now?
Yeah, I appreciate Stephen's concerns.
Yeah, I can tell. You know that. I appreciate Stephen's concerns. I don't know how much Stephen makes, but, you know, we're multimillionaires, us Bushes, and we have had to cut down dramatically on our caviar and hummingbird tongue canapé consumption. You have no idea how much fuel it takes to get those hummingbird tongues from their hummingbird lairs in coastal Spain over to the White House and Kennebunkport and Crawford. But what... And this is one of the limitations of radio, and someday, we'll be doing video, too, so you can see this stuff. And see the little smirk that's on his face when the softball question gets thrown at him by this goober from Politico who's wearing a red and white candy-striped tie. Doesn't want anybody to accuse him of being un-American or nothing. See, I got red and white and blue. I got my red, white, and I got my flag tie on. See, I'm not just wearing a lapel pin, George. I'm wearing a flag tie. Please don't have me waterboarded.
I mean, it's like when the price of gasoline is going up, it's like a tax. And,
I'm sorry. I'm hearing this for the first time with you. It's like a tax. well, yeah, George, it's like a tax. It's sort of like your Iraqupation tax. Now, isn't it, you flippin' numbskull? You soulless... It's like a tax. Because, see, it's bad. And all taxes are bad. Therefore, that's how it's like a tax.
I wish I could give Stephen a quick answer. Mm-hmm. In other words, it took us...
I wish you could give us an intelligent answer, but, you know, that's me.
...while to get to where we are, very dependent on oil, and in a world in which demand is greater than oil. And so my...
Huh? In a world in which demand is greater than oil... math moment. Could one of our mathematical geniuses that dot the Head On Radio Network audience please reduce that to an demand. We'll call that D, and then you'll use it. Let's see. That is that the alligator mouth goblin, or is that the alligator mouth getting gobbled? Is greater than all. See, that's it's mathematics. See, it's economics. Demand is greater than oil. Anybody could figure that one out.
The answer to Stephen is that the best thing we can do is to increase supply and to drill for...
I knew it! The best thing we can do is increase supply and go drill for oil up among the Moosesuses and the Caribbees up on the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. That's what we need to be doing. That's that we can increase supply.
Oil and gas in environmentally friendly ways at home and build more refineries. Stephen probably doesn't know this, but we haven't built a new refinery since 1976.
And it's the environmentalist's fault. Now, we've discussed this, the whole new refinery thing. The new refineries aren't being built because it is bad for business for the oil companies to build them. $10 billion a quarter, roughly, ExxonMobil is bringing in. But they can't build a new refinery because of the tree huggers and the enviro-Nazis that love little fishies more than they love their mamas. See, that's the problem.
And if we're truly interested in relieving the pressure on our consumers, then we ought to have a very active domestic policy now.
See, domestic policy, that's another word for corporate welfare. What we need is some more tax subsidies and tax breaks for ExxonMobil so that ExxonMobil will then feel that it is not so poverty-stricken anymore and can afford the terribly difficult regulatory process where they go and ask really nicely of the environmentalists if they get the EPA if they can pretty please build a refinery. See, like that.
Mr. President, as you know, as a possible solution, Senator McCain, Senator Clinton have talked about suspending the federal gasoline tax this summer. You've never said an absolute no to that. Is that something you'd consider, or do you think it's a bad idea?
I'll consider it. And there's all kinds of ideas. They're trying to pass a deal to stop filling the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. We'll look at that. The truth of the matter is that in order for there to be a substantial change, either consumers have to change their habits, which we're encouraging through alternative types of automobiles, or there has to be an increase of supply. And both of them have to go hand in hand in order to achieve,
in order to achieve another quarter of $10 billion profits for my very dear friends at ExxonMobil and Royal Dutch Shell and BP and everybody except that hateful shitgo, because, you know, that's that communist Hugo Chavez, and I don't care if he never makes another profit because he's a communist, you see. And he's a brutal dictator who hates his own people. What about was it just me? Or do I remember something like 8 years ago when he was running for this office that he never won in the first place? And he said, well, I'll go and I'll jawbone the Saudis. Another biblical reference, something about a jawbone of an ass. But I don't want to be watching on camera when he pulls his own jawbone out, do you? Oh, Mother McCree. Yeah, he's, speaking of jawboning the Saudis, he's off spending more of our money making stupid, needless trips to places that he really doesn't need to go. Apparently, the phone lines don't run between Washington, D.C. and Saudi Arabia because he's got to fly over there. You know why he's got to fly over there? He's not going to jawbone the Saudis. He's been called on the carpet by his masters in Riyadh. Well, actually, he's going to be stopping in Israel, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia. But don't worry. His dreams of peace don't include the Palestinians. He said, a grand peace between Israelis and Palestinians continues to look distant. That means more Palestinian babies can be blown up in helicopter rocket attacks. Because we build the helicopters. Yep. And we help pay for them, too. Just makes you feel all warm and fuzzy down in the pit of your gallbladder, doesn't it? It's a beautiful thing. Then, of course, well, there's always Iraq now, isn't there? We understand that he doesn't play golf anymore, and that's a sacrifice for me. You got to understand, it's a big sacrifice. When I stopped playing golf in August of 2003, I was on my way to an 18 handicap. I really was. And that was without cheating. Well, I mean, I shoot a ball into the trees every now and then, but the Secret Service goes and digs it out for me, and I get one of those. They say, Mr. President, I'm going to use my foot wedge. Yeah, George Bush on Iraq. It's a beautiful thing. Come on. Play now. Here we go. Yeah. Oh, the internets. Sometimes they're troublesome.
If we were to pull out of Iraq next year, what's the worst that could happen? What's the doomsday scenario?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that because it's all doomsday. Especially if that Muslim Barack Hussein Obama gets in, or that howling virago Hillary Clinton, it'll be and you know what, it'll all be their fault. Nothing's my fault. I'm glad you asked me that.
The scenario, of course, is that extremists throughout the Middle East would be emboldened, which would eventually lead to another attack on the United States. The biggest issue we face is it's bigger than Iraq. It's this ideological struggle against cold-blooded killers who will kill people to achieve their political objectives.
Wait a minute. Cold-blooded killers will kill people? Can't get anything past him now, can you?
Just happens to be, you know, a part of this global war. Iraq is a place where Al-Qaeda and other extremists have made their stand.
There's only one problem with that. And we'll come back to it. Don't worry. There's only one problem with that. I'm looking at a news story here. That's really just a little bit insane. U.S. Remember, it's the Central Front in the War on Terror. Remember? Got that? Okay. Write that down. Wouldn't want you to forget. The Bush regime has slashed its reward for the leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq from $5 million to $100,000. This is the guy that was allegedly arrested, but we said, no, he wasn't. It's not him. It's just some guy that got the same name or something. That happened last week. Before that, he was killed. Then he was arrested again. Then they let him go. Now he's re-killed and been rearrested, but it wasn't really him. And now his stock has gone down from $5 million to $100,000. Come on, it's because we're broke. No, it's because he's lost his effectiveness and is no longer worth such a steep price. Information on Abu Ayyub al-Masri is now worth only $100,000 under a separate and less well-known rewards program run by the Defense Department. The Defense Department asked that al-Masri be taken off the State Department list. No, really. So, with that in mind, we go back to this.
And they will be defeated. They'll be defeated through military action, but they'll also be defeated as this young democracy takes hold. They can't stand to live in a free society. That's why.
You mean the young democracy that keeps saying that they want you out, George? That young democracy? I mean, just for clarity's sake.
They try to fight free societies. And so the United States pulling out of Iraq or pulling out of the Middle East or not maintaining a forward presence would send all kinds of signals throughout the Middle East, and it would shake everybody's nerves, and it would embolden the very same people that we're trying to defeat.
Now wait. You know, he said that. He said what? That we'd be attacked again like we were on September 11th? There's only one problem with that. Before 2003... Iraq didn't have any particular reason or desire to attack us in the homeland. Whew! Can't make this stuff up. Just can't. But then there's the question of whether or not he was misled with information on Iraq. And you just can't, we can't leave without this. If I can make it work. Hey, we're doing this on the fly, okay? So, you know, you got to deal with it. Like I said, I only found out about this story a little bit ago, and I'm so grateful to ELO for shooting it along to me because, oh, it's making me feel so much better. You know what I mean?
I'm going to surprise you. This is a question from user Bruce Becker, and he asked, do you feel that you were misled on Iraq?
I feel like I felt like there were weapons of mass destruction.
Sir, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I didn't ask you. I asked you if you felt like you were misled, and you said you feel there were I see. It's that feeling believing problem again. Too much feeling, too much believing, and not enough knowing. You know what? You better be grateful. Because I hate the song so much that I'm almost entirely certain that it's not in my library. Because otherwise, if it was, with a line like feelings, you know, I felt there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, I would play feelings right like that. I would. Because I'm getting cranky again. This junk makes me cranky.
You know, mislead is a strong word.
No, lie is a strong word. Mislead, George, is a weenie word. Let's learn the difference.
That almost connotes some kind of intentional. I don't think so. I think.
No, I don't. What? The whole world knows that you lied. The whole world, George, knows that it was intentional. You and your gang of murderous thugs put it in writing. They said the project for a new American century,
word problem.
The document that put everything in play. said, we need a new Pearl Harbor so we can go to war to take over all the oil. George, your buddies admitted it. They've already dropped the dime on you, George.
There's a, not only our intelligence communities, but intelligence communities all across...
This is where he blames the British some more, and maybe the Germans.
The world shared the same assessment. And so I was disappointed to see how flawed our intelligence was.
And so you feel that you didn't have all the information you should have or the right spin on that information?
No, no. I was told by people that they had weapons of mass destruction, as were members of Congress who...
But what about the people who told you that they didn't? Oh, I'm sorry. They weren't allowed to have an audience with you, Your Holiness.
Voted for the resolution to get rid of Saddam Hussein, and of course the political...
How interesting. People in Congress who voted for the resolution to get rid of Saddam Hussein... Call me crazy, but I don't recall there being a resolution in Congress to get rid of Saddam Hussein. Now he's just making crap up. Oh, please, please, January 20th. I mean, I love the summertime. I love the beauty of autumn. And winter gets me down. And by January 20th, all the bowl games are over. College football's done, and we have nothing left but the advertising orgy of waiting on the Super Bowl. Please, January 20th, get here soon. Please. Please get here soon and let us know that it's going to be President Obama and not President McCain. Oh, please, January 20th, hurry, hurry.
Well, he gets on, they start to run and try to hide from their votes. But as did, you know, intelligence community.
Is it just me? How can you hide from a vote on a resolution that was never, that you didn't, that wasn't presented and never voted on? This is Senate bill, ... It's a bill entitled, A Bill to Get Rid of Saddam Hussein. Where are all you people running to? Damn.
It's all across the world felt the same thing. This was a kind of a common assessment.
All across the world, everybody was in agreement with George Bush. That's the world this little moron lives in. He thinks everybody agreed with him. He thinks everybody just knew that Saddam Hussein was going to get on his little inflatable rubber seahorse raft and row his nuclear bomb all the way across the Atlantic and detonate it in Charleston Harbor, or maybe New York Harbor, or maybe Crawford, Texas. We don't know. But, well, I don't know. It's a rubber raft, so how far could he... You know, just like the end of Catch-22. I'm telling you, these people think it's an operations manual and not a dark comic novel. But what do I know?
So mislead means, I think somebody lied to me? No, I don't. I think it was just, you know, they analyzed the situation and...
remember. There's as much music in the empty spaces between the notes as in the notes themselves. Did they lie to me? No, they didn't lie to me. I lied to other people. That's how that works. Merciful sakes. This man's not even, he's not even in the world anymore. He thinks that an appropriate grieving response is to stop going to the country club. Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Let's go to the phones. Hey, who have I got?
Wayne.
Hey, man.
What's up, buddy?
Oh, just having a hissy.
Yeah, well, I'm having a hissy, too. I mean, how long are people going to put up with this no new refinery since 1970 because of the... environmentalists are stopping us and stuff. You know, Marathon is, you've seen the TV commercials.
Yeah.
A $3.2 billion expansion that'll give us, what, 73 million gallons or 73 million barrels more, or, you know, of refined oil by 2010. The executives of all the oil company just testified before Congress again that they don't want new refineries. They don't have plans to build new refineries. Nobody's stopping anybody. And
well, if they built new refineries, Wayne, then maybe the $10 billion a quarter profit margin would go down. We can't have that.
No, it wouldn't, because if they build new refineries, they'll be subsidized by us.
Oh, there's that.
Yes, there'll be tax breaks, and just like the electric companies. You know, we got to build a new plant, therefore it won't be online in 10 years. But we're going to raise your bill now, you know, to pay for it. And I'll tell you another thing that's really upsetting me is the way West Virginia has been betrayed. In every media circle there is, there's last few things. I am not a college person, but I have 3 master degrees in life, and I'll be damned if I'm going to put up with these assholes calling me some ignorant boob because I didn't go to college. I've had enough of that.
I don't blame
you. Absolutely disgusts me.
But, you know, that's what we've had a steady diet of for the last, what, 5, 6, 7 days?
At least, it's, you know.
You know, I got this thing from graphic from Left Wing Conspiracy that I saw yesterday. It's still pissing me off. It's a map of West Virginia, and underneath it says, "Stupid is as stupid does. Won't vote for Obama because, quote, I heard he's a Muslim," unquote.
Right, and that there's only people in West Virginia believe that.
Yeah.
There's only people, and there's nobody else that believes that.
But that's the only meme that the for-profit media can work with, Wayne. This is the same crowd and the same thinking that sent that flyer that showed John Kerry putting a knife through a Bible to West Virginia in 2004.
I was going to bring that up exactly. And where did that only ran in 2 states?
Arkansas and West Virginia.
Right. So we're the dummies of the world.
Yeah.
That's what they're calling us.
Now, on the other hand...
We don't have any teeth, either.
Or shoes. Don't forget the shoes. But see, there is a smidgen of truth somewhere in all of it, Wayne.
Yes, there is.
Because there are a lot of people who got that flyer of John Kerry with the knife in the Bible... and ran. Man, they didn't crawl or walk. They wind sprinted to the polls to vote for George W. Bush because John Kerry was going to get their Bibles.
Right.
And 4 years before, you know what happened. And you know what happened in Beckley at the armory. Charlton Heston came and said that Al Gore was going to get their guns. And again, they wind sprinted to the polls to protect their guns.
I'm happy to say I was standing there protesting.
I wouldn't expect any less of you.
Well, I was there. Oh, I told you that. I had a sign that said NRA was the National Republican Association.
Yeah, that's long about when I was calling them the National Republican Rifle Association. Yeah.
Right. And some guy got all excited and called a television reporter over and, he said... And what was wrong? He says some guy standing over says NRA stands for the National Republican Assholes.
Well, there's that. It does.
Well, you know, I would like to have written that on my sign.
Next time, bring a Sharpie for quick additions or corrections.
Right. Exactly. I told him it doesn't say that. Now, you know, I certainly agree it should say that, but, you know.
But it's 8:05 p.m. Wayne, do you have the TV on? Are the returns coming in? Have they declared for Hillary yet, or did they declare for Hillary at noon?
They declared that at 7:33. You know, I just came back. I voted early this morning. I came back and Josh was at work, and Al Martine was one of his teachers, and he saw him at the store and told him, don't forget to vote. So I took Josh to vote.
Oh, good.
Yes. He wanted to vote. He's registered. By God, he voted. So, but I don't know. It's, we'll see. We have some, a couple of very interesting races. One I'm real interested in is the Supreme Court.
Yeah, that's what I said at the beginning of the program. The biggest reason I went today was to have a say in that contest. Because anything I can do to stop Spike Maynard that I can peacefully and legally do, I by God will do.
And so will I. and have encouraged everybody to do that. I don't know. We'll see the results here before too awful long, I guess. But, you know, you got a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, and I got a flyer. I got another one of those flyers in my mailbox the other day from West Virginians for Life,
mm-hmm.
saying that Spike Maynard is pro-life. And see, those people are ignorant to me. Those, you know, I would expect those people not to have shoes or teeth. I would expect them to be in line with the stereotypes that you and I hate. But we live here and we know them.
Stereotype.
Huh?
You know, the word is stereotype. You know, don't group me in with those people.
Right, because I'm not that way.
No, I'm not. And a whole bunch of West Virginians aren't that way. But.
And I'm not necessarily willing to equate, and I have seen it done plenty. Plenty enough to make me about halfway nauseated. Equating, well, you know, there's a lot of people voting for Hillary, and they're doing that because they're racists. No. They're doing that because they've got an 18-year, well-established, friendly relationship with Bubba.
That's exactly right.
And they love him. They have loved him since the first time he came here, because for the first time a Democrat was coming to West Virginia running for president who sounded a little bit like them.
That's exactly right. And, you know, listen, you know from my conversations in, early on that I was a Hillary supporter.
Yeah.
I didn't vote for Hillary. I voted for Barack. Now, you know, you could see the writing on the wall. I mean, you know, and I'll work my rear end off for Barack Obama.
Yeah. And I know when you say you'll do that, just because, you know, you're the boss and everything and you're part of the company and I know a little bit about how you do things, when you say you'll work your ass off for him, that's real. That's
that is real.
12, 14, 16 hours a day delivering signs, putting signs in yards, talking to people. You know, absolutely. And how could you not? I mean, what doesn't hinge on this election, Wayne?
The free world is at stake. It's just that simple. You know, I don't know if you saw that thing today. Something McCain's economic plans is to continue to tax cuts for the rich and tax cuts for the corporation, and nobody gets taxed except the little people. And I forget how many trillions of dollars that it would come to in 8 years of a John McCain presidency. But how's he going to pay for that? He's going to cut Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and CHIPS program and, you know. And then you have people that come up and, well, you know, I mean, it's the fight of how do you get people to stop voting against their own self-interest, because he'll eliminate abortion. He'll the whole scoop.
Oh, by November, he'll be a devout man of God, Wayne, and you and me both know it. And
exactly.
And you and I both know, at least here, the answer to the question of how you stop this foolishness. You stop the politicking from the pulpit. Because, like I said at the beginning of the program, I'm not kidding. I have heard Barack Obama is a Muslim, and they always follow it with either his wife or his mother is an atheist. Okay? I've heard that no less than a dozen times, and I have questioned the person that I asked, or that I heard it from every time. I've asked them, Wayne, I've said, where in heaven's name did you hear that? Because it's a lie.
It is a lie.
And you know what 12 out of 12 said?
What's that?
At church.
At church, yeah. Well.
Tax-free license to lie and libel and slander. And it's all tax-free. That just drives me nuts.
No more nuts than it drives me. I'll tell you, it's, I don't know. I have to calm down, I think.
Well,
I have a heart condition, you know.
Now, I know. I worry about you.
I don't. I think that's what keeps my heart going.
That's like
Homer Simpson. You ever see that Homer Simpson thing where all his organs are malfunctioning and getting bunched up, and he just takes a big old gulp of what you drink, Duff. Or
Duff, yeah, Duff.
Straightens it all out, man.
Oh, exactly. You know, you see those utility trucks that drive down the road, you know, powered by natural gas. I think we need to get a bumper sticker for your truck, Wayne. Powered
yeah.
by powered by political frustration.
Exactly. I could, you know, I have some ungodly thoughts sometimes, Bob.
Yeah, but they can't throw you in Guantanamo for them yet.
Not yet, as long as they're just thoughts. Of course, they're going to figure out a way to read those, but I don't know.
Oh, jeez.
You know, let's just hope, well, if we could knock Spike Maynard off, it will be a great evening for me.
Yes, politically. Knock Spike Maynard off politically.
Politically, yes. Let's please stress that. I have to watch my words, you know. His agent, who is it?
George? Fred.
Fred, yeah. I still don't have any guns, Fred.
Well, you know what? Agent Fred listens every night, and I don't mind, but I sure as hell wish he'd become a contributor.
Yeah, well, I think that's the least he could do, for crying out loud. The least he could do.
I mean, we'd even let him call in if he wanted to.
Oh, that would be fun. I think that would be, well... Nobody can handle people like that like you, buddy. I'd love to hear it some more.
I know.
But I get off here. I'm sure there's people.
Yeah, breathe, Wayne.
Yeah, okay. I will, pal.
Yeah, there's a great calming quality to that first when, you know, when the beer bottle gets open. It's like Valium to me.
I just heard that down a few seconds ago.
And you're feeling better already, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
We'll talk to you later, brother.
All right, pal.
See ya. Bye now. Oh, yeah, you know, it's like Valium. Just, oh, I feel better already. Huh, let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome
to
the program. Hey, David, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to call because I urge you to play this right now without even checking what it is. It's the history. It's how the petrodollar will be marketed to America. If you go to submedia.tv,
okay,
just play it. And like I said, Bob, when you watch this, it's genius. When you hear it and you see it, it's beyond brilliant. But just hearing it is genius. What this guy did, I believe his name is Dean Opperman, and he's made an amazing video. It's only 3 minutes, so I don't know if you have a way to play the audio now. People need to hear it, and they'll laugh.
Submedia.tv. Okay, yeah. Well, you just stand by right there, all right?
Okay.
Don't go anywhere.
All right. I wanted to surprise you too, Bob, so you see.
Okay. Any dirty words?
No cursing, no censor, but...
Uncle Sam says, turn in your coins. Now that President Bush has declared martial law, it will be illegal to be in possession of precious metals after the first of the year. That's why all citizens are urged to redeem their coins at any of the over 48,000 Halliburton service stations throughout the United States. We call it Operation Change for the Better, and for good reason. First, the new money is based on a petroleum standard, so the coins will appear in gallon denominations instead of dollars, which makes sense since that's where most of your income goes anyway. Let's familiarize ourselves with the new coins, starting with the 10-gallon denomination, which features the president's mother, Barbara Bush, who will forever be remembered for single-handedly changing the world's perspective by noting that the refugees of Hurricane Katrina were better off after the disaster than before. This happy fact is memorialized on the reverse with the adorable image of two lost children paddling past the Superdome. The 5-gallon coin celebrates our comatose press and the 5th anniversary of Larry King's momentous interview with Elizabeth Taylor on the eve of the Iraq War. This coin is also known as the Buffaloed Press Nickel because of the American bison on the reverse butting heads with the liberal media. The 1-gallon coin, or the Condi, honors Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, whose solution to Middle East conflict is summarized on the reverse, piping Persia for peace. The 1/2-gallon coin, or the Scalia, depicts the Supreme Court justice against a backdrop of uncounted Florida ballots, while on the reverse, presidential adviser Karl Rove celebrates the modern miracle of electronic voting. Finally, there's the 1-cup coin, or the Bracero, honoring the millions of aliens the president welcomed into the American labor pool. It features the unknown Bracero on the front, while on the back, more illegals jump the border in Roger Clark Wilson's Gateway to Servitude. Yes, a fitting tribute to big business's final triumph over organized labor. The larger denominations begin with the 25-gallon Royal Limbaugh, celebrating uniformity of speech. It features a Greco-Roman interpretation of commentators Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, and Ann Coulter under the banner One Media, One Voice. The 50-gallon coin pays homage to Donald Rumsfeld and the concept of democracy at gunpoint. The 75-gallon coin features Vice President Cheney and the creed for which he's dedicated the bulk of his public life, In Greed We Trust. On the reverse, an American eagle and the price of gas engage in a symbolic race for the moon. Finally, there's the 100-gallon coin, or the Bush doubloon. The presidential credo, Fighting Terrorism by Creating It, is featured. While on the reverse, the events of 9/11 are recalled under the motto, Lest They Forget, We'll Remind. Here, a new World Trade Center rises from the ashes of the Pentagon, crested by the men of Iwo Jima. On the right, Vice President Cheney is seen canceling North American fighter cover. While on the left, the president reads My Pet Goat to Florida kindergartners. Yes, it's a vivid snapshot of that fateful day, captured for all time in 100% depleted uranium. Be among the first to redeem coins worth 100 gallons or more, and receive this limited edition doubloon, featuring President Bush along with Presidents Hoover and Harding, kindred leaders who also labored under a plundered economy. Yes, it's out with the old, in with the new. Operation Change for the Better, from the United States government and Halliburton, working together to round up every cent you have.
That's a beautiful thing.
I know. If there was ever a resume for head-on media, that guy just turned his into you.
Oh, he's a genius. That's a beautiful thing. And, you know, starting off with the, wow, a coin with the face of Barbara Bush on it.
Oh, I mean, people have to go to submedia.tv and just hit play. Because the graphics that they did to accompany it, it shows a lot of work and a lot of detail as well. It's not some Photoshop job. It's some real...
No, this is truly professional. This took a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of thought.
The beautiful part about it is it's only 3 minutes. It sums up perfectly with the petrodollar.
And, well, you know what I love best about it, David?
Yeah.
It sounds exactly like the stupid buy gold now hustles that run on right-wing radio.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously the jumping-off point for the creation of this.
And the Time Life coins, too, of course.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. and then to drop that on you at the very end, all coins crafted of 100% depleted uranium.
Yeah. I thought what was... What's really impressive is the guy after that, after Blimp TV, his name is the Stimulator, and he makes these videos. I guess I just found out about him. He's on GNN, too. He blogs on GNN. And he makes these amazing subversive-type videos, kind of like David Lynchian, and mixes all kinds of things from movies to pop culture. Then he does all these intense graphic design that he does inside them, but he does like a 10-minute news report. And today's news report involved a section of May Day and the history of May Day. And then he was playing select clips from a movie that involved workers' rights and coal mining. Tuan, is it called, or something? Matewan, yeah. There you go. He played some clips from that, and he really summed up where we're at right now. So I would urge people to check that. I believe... it's like the third one on the if you hit the selector on submedia.tv. I just found out about this site, and what's amazing about it is what they do is they take a bunch of all the video clips and they run it through their feeder. So it's just kind of like a TV channel, but they select all of the ones that they want people to see. So you just hit play, and if there's something you don't want to see or you're not really interested in or you've seen it already, you can just hit the select button.
You know, anytime I see sub anything, I always think of sub genius.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's some, you know, affiliation or some sort of connection, or even conceptual or philosophical connection between the two.
Now, because, what exactly is the history of sub genius?
It's the Church of the Sub Genius.
That guy. Oh, he's amazing. He did a lot of voice work for Coast to Coast AM. He would be one of the crank callers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he would always, and the gag was they would always interview him, but they would never say his actual affiliation and where he came from, his background. And he would always fool people. I forget what he would be called on Coast to Coast AM, but I think that was one of Art Bell's brilliant moments, bringing that guy on board. And I think he still does call in from time to time.
Oh, cool. I didn't know about that connection, but it goes all the way back to Devo and stuff like that. I know that they were associated with the whole concept. A buddy of mine was all into it for a while. I think I seem to recall a news story from a woman who lost custody of her child because she was part of the Church of the Subgenius, and her weirdo fundamentalist ex-husband said they encourage nudity.
I believe he still preaches and gives lectures.
It wouldn't shock me at all. Not in the least.
But anyways, I just wanted to share people with that petrodollar, and hopefully everyone, whenever you bring up the oil and the petrodollar, you should just play that.
I think I may very well do so. I'm hanging on to that. That's a beautiful thing. Of course.
All right, I just wanted to share that with you.
All right, take it easy, David. Good hearing
from
you.
All right, later.
Bye now. All the way from Maine, our pop culture correspondent and web surfer extraordinaire, our buddy David. Sometimes I think that David has seen the entire internet. No kidding. I think he's seen everything that's on it. It's like that one cable commercial. Well, you've gotten to the end of the internet. What now? David has seen the whole internet. Really. All right. Where to next? Let's see. I don't know. We could do a little musical interlude. Yeah, hey, yeah, why not? After all that faith-based stuff about, you know, believing that I have peeled like some sort of grape. Just for you, Billy Shears. We'll be back in just a minute after a quick break. Hey, call in if you want to. 304-658-33.
I've got a feeling deep inside. Oh, yeah. I can't hide, oh no, no, oh no, oh no.
feelings used to be good. Believing used to be okay. But after 8 years of the Bush administration, you know, I've had enough of faith-based government to last me a lifetime. And I really have. I've gotten to the point where every time I see the word believe or feel in print, I know that I'm reading trash. Because I don't do a lot of feeling or believing reading anymore. I'm interested in facts. Oh, by the way, a little background on Submedia. Our pal Cindy in the Great Northwest says these guys are really smart. Their first project was about 10 years ago. They put up special effect artwork on the subway walls in New York City. So when the windows of a passing commuter train went by, they came to life. She says, I'll try to find that earlier ad. I've always liked Submedia. By the way, have you ever checked out Joe Cartoon? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, I have. I love Joe Cartoon. Not for on the air until after you've pre-selected an appropriate cartoon. In other words, some are okay, some aren't. It was over at Joe Cartoon that I first discovered the hamster in a microwave cartoon, which is just deliciously sick. Yeah, we're done with the Bush audio. Our pal Marty says, must you inflict this fool on us? I must. But no more for the rest of the night, which mercifully is about 32 minutes long. Literature corner moment, if you will. I've mentioned the film Dr. Strangelove. I've mentioned Joseph Heller's masterwork, Catch-22. And suggested that the right wing has taken them, because they are utterly devoid of a real sense of humor, they've taken them as operations manuals and occupation, and Dr. Strangelove as some sort of a documentary, instead of understanding the bleak, dark comedy that they are. God, I can't wait until they start reading Kurt Vonnegut and firebombing cities again. Oy. But I've got another one for you. Another one for the reading list. Another book that somebody in the Pentagon apparently read and didn't realize was satire. Satire has apparently become very, very dangerous in our country. Because I refer you to the work of the brilliant English satirist Evelyn Waugh. E-V-E-L-Y-N, Waugh. W-A-U-G-H. Evelyn Waugh is hilarious. Evelyn Waugh was a genius. Evelyn Waugh was a guy. You know, the English and so forth sometimes name their boys Evelyn, which many of us look at and go, oh, Evelyn. No. Evelyn Waugh wrote a beautiful little, just brutal tome called, and it was turned into a brilliant film, by the way, The Loved One. It had to do with events surrounding, long before there was ever a Stephen King, a Pet Sematary. And if you want to laugh, go buy yourself a used copy of The Loved One, strap yourself in, and wait for the hurting and the crying to pass, because it'll do both to you. You will laugh until your sides hurt and the tears flow freely down your face. There are very few books out there that do that to me. Evelyn Waugh is one of them. John Kennedy Toole is another. His only work, and a masterwork it is, A Confederacy of Dunces. And anything by Mark Twain. I think Mark Twain holds the record, at least with me, for stuff that has made me just roll on the floor. And I've devastated Agnes with it, too, so and other friends, and so I know that it's not just me. The awful German language from A Tramp Abroad, can't beat it. How I Edited an Agricultural Paper, Journalism in Tennessee. Oh, the list is endless for good giggles from Mr. Clemens. But I have before my lying eyes proof that somewhere, someone in the Pentagon has read Evelyn Waugh's The Loved One and completely missed the joke. The U.S. military has, since 2001, cremated some of the remains of U.S. service members killed in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere in a Delaware facility that also cremates pets. The process only ended this past Friday when the Pentagon got busted. The facility resides in an industrial park near Dover Air Force Base, Delaware, where we're not allowed to see the returning bodies of the destroyed soldiers who died in the name of George Bush, who no longer plays golf in front of cameras. That was pointed out to me. Bob, he's only given up playing golf in front of cameras. Four. The facility's in an industrial base near Dover Air Force Base and has cremated about 200 service members whose ashes were then, to some degree, at least on a molecular level, mixed with the remains of beloved Fluffy and beloved Spot. Oh, now stop it, Bob. The manager of the crematorium said it uses separate crematories, a few feet apart, to cremate humans and animals. Pentagon officials said they don't think any humans were... No, see, there's that verb problem. So sick of seeing people transpose think and believe as if they were the same damn word, which they ain't. This is the quote from the newspaper story. Pentagon officials said they do not think any humans were cremated in the pet crematory. No! Wrong! The way that should read, and that's not a quote, that is from the Washington Post article by Ann Scott Tyson. And apparently the editing craft has gone way downhill, because that's one that you just stopped it. No. They're not thinking. The Pentagon is not in the thinking business. Pentagon officials said they do not believe any humans were cremated in the pet crematory because they have no evidentiary proof of the contrary. They don't believe any humans were cremated. Quote, "We have absolutely no evidence whatsoever at this point that any human remains were at all ever mistreated." That's Pentagon Press Secretary Jeff Morrell. Late in the day on Friday. And we're telling you this on late Friday because we know that as a member of the Washington Press Corps, you will be blitzed out of your gourd by 6 p.m. and unable to report anything about this by Monday, so the story won't stick to us, okay? Hey, look, here's a free drink coin for TGI McThirsties. Go get loaded, kids! Officials, however, said they do not know... see the selective use of the verb? Despite Bose's estimate, David Bose, the manager of the crematory in the industrial park, I'll tell you what, that's touching, isn't it? Your world has come apart because your beloved son, your brother, your husband, your wife, your daughter, has been wasted in the killing sands of Iraq. And you're told about all the pomp and circumstance that will attend the funeral. But first, they have to take your beloved to a crematory in an industrial park somewhere near Dover Air Force Base in Delaware and toast him next to Fluffy. Despite Bose's estimate of 200 people, I wonder what he charges for that, by the way. I mean, it's the Pentagon. I'm sure it's a $50,000 cremation. Despite Bose's estimate, officials said they do not know the number of service members cremated at the Kent County facility, identified on a billboard as Friends Forever Pet Cremation Service. No, really. Friends Forever Pet Cremation Service. Defense Secretary Robert Gates. Oh, what a goon he is. Defense Secretary Robert Gates found, quote, "the site and signage insensitive and entirely inappropriate for the dignified treatment of our fallen. The families of the fallen have the Secretary's deepest apologies." You know, I don't like to scream. I don't want to scream. I don't scream for theatrical benefit. And a lot of times I spend just sort of clutching my own abdomen with my arms to keep from doing it. The families of the fallen have the Secretary's deepest apologies. You rotten SOB, Robert Gates. You lousy bastard. They don't deserve your deepest apology, Mr. Secretary, for how their dead remains were treated. They deserve your deepest apology for your ongoing complicit engagement in this criminal conspiracy that results in the occupation of a nation that did not lift a finger against us nor fire a shot in anger. The revelation came to light when an Army officer who works at the Pentagon traveled to Delaware on Thursday to attend the cremation of a military comrade, offended to discover that the facility was labeled as a pet crematory. The officer sent an email late Thursday to superiors at the Pentagon, and that included a photograph of the signage. It soon rocketed to the attention of Gates, who directed David Chu, Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, to conduct a comprehensive review of existing DOD policies and practices governing the cremation and handling of remains of U.S. service members. Bose said his company owns one pet crematory that is square and too small for most humans, who are cremated in two larger rectangular crematories in the same room. Well, most average humans who die an average natural death. If, however, your beloved Johnny has been blown into about 50 pieces, he could probably fit in the small, square spot crematory. And no one would be the wiser now, would they? Because after all, unless you're, you know, Captain Hoosis from the Pentagon, well, you can't go and see a body unloaded at Dover Air Force Base, now can you? I'm just sick. I am just sick. Friends Forever Pet Cremation Service, come on down. We'll treat your beloved pet as if it was a member of our family, too. In fact, it may be cremated next to the remains of someone else's member of their family. No, really, their son or their daughter, who died a miserable, horrible death screaming for their mother in the sands of Iraq. Come on down to Friends Forever Pets Cremation Service in Delaware. Little hard to stomach. A little bit. But that's okay. The Bush administration doesn't treat our service members with the regard that most of us hold for our family pets. The Bush administration starts wars against countries that aren't at war with us. George Bush gets in front of a camera and talks about congressional resolutions to get rid of Saddam that never existed. Not even a little bit. I can't imagine. I don't want to ever imagine what it would be like to know that my son, my child, my daughter, my brother, my friend, was so thoroughly disregarded as to have been cremated with the remains of a dog or a cat or a budgie. Not that I hold those animals in any disregard, but that I hold in such high regard people who would, in fact, risk their lives, even in the face of the knowledge that the mission they are on is a fraud. You know, we can't get the Republicans in the Senate to sign off on Senator Jim Webb's GI Bill for the 21st century because they say, well, you know, letting them go to college and stuff might take enlistment numbers down. among other people, let's see, that freak Senator Jim Inhofe, I believe, had been a sponsor. He backed out. I wonder if anybody's bothered to tell that pissant Inhofe from Oklahoma that maybe thinking that they're going to be burned up in a pet crematorium would cut down on, you know, enlistment numbers. But I'm crazy, right? But that's okay. The Senate is hard at work. This from our buddy Lee. Subject line, and I thought Arlen Specter chasing Roger Goodell around was wasting Senate time. Headline, closely divided Senate holds vote on thermostat change. No, really, this is not from The Onion. It's really not from The Onion. The closely divided Tennessee State Senate. The closely divided Tennessee State Senate is accustomed to floor fights about weighty issues. On Tuesday, that would be today, the members of the Tennessee State Senate proved that even more lighthearted issues like complaints about the temperature in the chamber can lead to gridlock. The Tennessee Senate held a voice vote on whether to turn down air conditioning after Senator John Wilder, a Mason County Democrat who has served in the upper chamber for more than four decades, said the room was too cold. It wasn't clear which side prevailed on the vote, but Speaker Ron Ramsey, a Bluntville Republican, brokered a compromise by instructing the clerk to turn the thermostat up by 3 degrees. It's over. Somewhere along the way, we missed the apocalypse because, stories like that, that's post-apocalyptic material, all right? With this comment, please, Senator Wilder, go home. Fly your plane. Ride your unicycle. Take a bus. Just go. Much like the request of Cromwell so long ago. Go, for God's sakes. Go!
It's a little cold in here. I move, Mr. President, that we lower the thermostat, we raise the thermostat by 8 degrees.
My honorable friend is obvious. Oh, gee. Stop it. Can you imagine that that's the, if you lived in Tennessee, at the very mention of that, would you already be at hard at work at your keyboard crafting a recall petition for that entire august body? Because I would. But it's not. Now, bear in mind, I'm not being rough on Tennessee because the state senate of West Virginia is dumber, not dumb as, dumber than a bag of hammers. I mean, dumb. They waste entire legislative sessions pondering the vicissitudes of tongue splitting. Yeah, really, that happened a few years ago. Tongue splitting. I wish I was joking. But that's America. What do we like to call them now? Our wounded warriors. And we cremate them in pet crematories. Our wounded warriors. This would be the appropriate time to make some sort of snide comment about making an ash of oneself, but I'm not going to do that. I'm informed, by the way, that Tennessee at this point in time has a $200 million deficit, and the Tennessee Senate is wrestling over an 8-degree change in the thermostat. What's the old line? The condemned ate heartily. Let's see, that one's too serious. Yeah, not that one either. Oh, by the way, yeah, okay, yeah, this is good. We talked about oil refineries a few minutes ago because Dear Leader said that, you know, we can't build any refineries in America, and then Wayne straightened up Dear Leader on that one. Flush Flimball was on the air yesterday. It's Monday. Wow. Must have had a relatively calm weekend if he was working Monday. Usually you don't come down from that kind of stuff for... Never mind. Flush was on the air yesterday, Monday, and he was talking about the criticism of George Bush by Dick Gephardt. Dick Gephardt, you see, had spoken at a dinner or a meeting or some such. Of Democrats, and he had said, "Oh, let's see, what's the quote?" Yeah, he said that. Well, George Bush is not the sharpest knife in the drawer. Gephardt said, quote, George Bush is by far the worst person who's ever been president of the United States. Gas is $4 a gallon on its way to $8 a gallon, and this man sits there clueless. Well, that didn't sit well with the oxymoron. No, not at all. He had this to say yesterday.
Mike Skelton, a Democrat from Lexington, which is outside Kansas City, is a Clinton supporter, sought to ease concerns from the Obama camp about his decision Friday to go public with his concerns about Obama's electability. A lot of people are starting to do this now. Well, not a lot, but there's some starting to be concerned here about Obama.
What was that noise? I mean, I know I make some funny ones from time to time, and then, oh, my, and, oh, dear, and, you know, those kind of things. What was that noise? Wait a minute. I'm going to back this up just a little bit.
Public with his concerns about Obama's electability. A lot of people are starting to do this now. Well, not a lot, but there's some starting to be...
Is it just me, or... Does Rush Limbaugh, behind the golden EIB mic, does Rush Limbaugh have one of those special chairs from Idiocracy? You know, the one that Frito is sitting in when the coffin comes, and it's got a toilet built into it, and the feeding tube, and the, you know, go away, I'm baiting. That chair. You know, right there. Did you, what the, this, $29 million a year for that! If I'd made a noise like that on the air when I was broadcasting at the Gospel Voice of Northwest Alabama for $3.35 an hour, I'd have been canned! We were told, you know, there are noises you don't make behind the microphone.
Electability. A lot of people are starting to do this now. Well, not a lot, but there's some starting to be...
Rush, buddy... FiberCon, it helps. But that's not what this is about. Let him go on.
Concerned here about Obama's electability. Richard Gephardt, another Clinton supporter, won the strongest ovation at the Missouri State Democrat Convention when he said this. George Bush is by far the worst person who's ever been president of the United States. Gasoline's $4 a gallon on its way to $8 a gallon, and this man sits there clueless.
Now wait. Wait just a minute, because the lying is about to begin. And again, it's one of those run around the room tearing at your hair and your clothing and being restrained by a loving family member until you can calm down. Remember, there are 2 or 3 million Americans who hear this crap every day, and if he says it, they believe it. Here it comes.
Hey, little Dick.
Oh, that. What? Oh, how funny. Hey, little Dick. That's on the public airwaves. Sometime between noon and 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Where's L. Brent Bozo the third? And the Families, Parents, Resource, Media, Institute Council. And what's his name? Bob Peters?
and decency in media and that. Where are they when Flush Flimball's running around making little dick jokes on the public airwaves at high noon? Hear the crickets? But that's not what this is about either.
All well and good. But these gas prices didn't start going through the roof till your buddies took over the to the house in 2006.
I almost made one of those noises that Rush was making. Gas prices didn't start going through the roof till your buddies took over the house in 2006. No, you really heard it. He really said that. Then again, there's the Energy Information Administration, which points out that monthly gasoline prices began to climb several years before Democrats took control of the Congress, and that they've been climbing since then. But you see, that's a fact. That's one of those I know things. It's not one of those they believe things or they feel things. That's a no thing, and they don't do the knowing thing. They just believe that Democrats are at fault for high gas prices, and therefore it's okay, and therefore it's true. It's just true. My friends, I sit behind a golden EIB microphone, and I tell you nothing but the truth. I am America's truth detector, and if I make a sound that sounds like I'm having a bowel movement on the air, and a difficult one at that, and then say that Democrats in controlling Congress are at fault for high gas prices, you know that you can take it to the bank. Makes you wonder where he keeps that golden EIB microphone when he's not using it, doesn't it? Meanwhile, deep-pocketed liberals continue to complain about the absence of a liberal response to the likes of Flush Flimball, and I have to do what I'm about to do. And that is to let you know that it is the 13th day of May. We are 2 days from the middle of the month, and we are not at halfway to our monthly contribution goal. I don't want $29 million. I wouldn't know what to do with $29 million. Well, actually, I would, but you get the point. We talk about $2,000 a month. And those of you who are regular contributors will never begin to know how sincerely grateful we all at the Horn are that you are willing to go where you go to keep us on the air. Those of you who have not contributed, who do not contribute, however, if any show on this network is worth it to you, I implore you to do so. Use the PayPal donate button over at headonradionetwork.com. It's quick and it's simple. That is the advantage of it. Or subscribe. $10 a month, $25 a month, $100 a month, whatever you can afford. And if you can't afford it, that's okay too. We will keep on scraping by, and we will keep on being here for as long as we possibly can. We were in a $300 hole from April. We were in a hole before that, and a hole before that, and a hole before that. And still we manage somehow to keep it going. It pays for advertising. It pays for electricity. It pays for computer upgrades and computer fixes. I'm still sitting here looking at about $1,000 worth of repairs that I can't have done because we're just hanging on and making payments. So if you have not become a contributor, well, it would be a really, really good thing for the continued existence of the Horn, if you would. As I noted, Peter Godbold is still in server hell. Trust me, he would far rather be behind the microphone right now than where he is. So, he's a rerun. We'll be going to his program from last week, the 7th of May. After that, I hope a Horn section
and I assume John Fox and all Foxed Up. John had some problems with plumbing last night, and I told him I would rather take an ass-whipping out behind the building than fool with plumbing, so I understood where he was with that. Many thanks to the man who makes all the streams stream and all the podcasts pod or cast or whatever podcasts do and all the archives archive, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. He does this without sending a bill, and he needs help too. He is the hardest working man in liberal talk, and I know of which I speak. Many thanks to Peter Godbold and John Fox, respectively, our IT professional and our chief engineer. Thanks to the moderators in the chat room and the bloggers, the news ninjas, everybody associated with this effort that makes this effort so incredibly special. Thank you. Thanks to our sponsor, Coal River Mountain Watch, who in part bring you every program on the Horn. You can be part of the solution to mountaintop removal by going to crmw.net. You'll be joining and standing shoulder to shoulder with the hardest working, bravest people that I know. crmw.net. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Kids, it's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 142 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, in touch with the LGBT community and our straight allies. The mainstream media told me to say that. Strictly Confidential is found exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch, that's crmw.net. Stop by Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net and have a look at what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day, today being Wednesday, May 7, 2008. So if you're listening at about 9:02 p.m. Eastern Time on a Wednesday evening, May 7, 2008, you're listening to a live show, and you are more than welcome to call in and participate. I'll be giving out the phone numbers and email addresses in just a moment. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests and to the audio archives from past shows. Then you'll find links there to the chat room. It's a good night to stop by the chat room. Just stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com and click on the chat link, and you'll be taken to the chat registration where you decide what username you'd like, and just that simple, you get to log in. And you'll find some of the smartest and funniest people on the planet. And indeed, it was a riot this evening when Bob Kincaid... Well, let me just say, if you missed the Bob Kincaid show this evening, stop by White Rose Society and have a listen to the archive. It was a treat. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com for the Strictly Confidential MySpace page. You'll find links there also to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. And you're going to find links there to the Head On Radio Network main site. That's headonradionetwork.com, of which I am a small part. There you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. And there is a PayPal button there as well to make it easy for you to support the Head On Radio Network, to keep the packets passing and the network cards interfacing and the hard drives spinning and the floppies flopping and the keyboards typing and the monitors shining in the dark wee hours of a West Virginia night. Those of you who are new to the Head On Radio Network may know that I'm in Tallahassee. You can tell that from my website, but what you may not know is we're far flung. The studio is located in West Virginia. We have guests and further south in Florida. We have guests and hosts, the correct word,